ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session pursuant to law.
Be seated. Thank you. Good morning once again and welcome to the Idaho Supreme Court sitting at Brigham Young University, Idaho today on June 14, 2023 for the third and final hearing of our time here in Rexburg. The third case today is entitled Yellowstone Log Homes LLC versus the City of Rigby. In this matter, Yellowstone Log Homes appeals and are represented by Weston Davis. And the City of Rigby is the respondent and a cross-appellant in this case, represented by Sam. Is it Angel or Angle? I'm sorry, sir.
Angel.
Angel. Thank you. You'll note that one of our number is missing. Justice Brody is absent and excused from this hearing today. She will fully participate by listening to the recording that's being made of these proceedings and then fully engage with us in resolution of this case. Counsel, do either of you have any preliminary matters prior to argument today?
No.
No, you're very well. Mr. Davis, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Weston Davis. I represent Yellowstone Log Homes. I want to thank the court.
Sorry,
the clock not running.
Madam Clerk, timer does not. All right. Please proceed.
I actually wanted the extra time.
There it went.
Thank you for coming to Rexburg, Idaho. It's rare, although I know the court tries hard to get around the state, but it is rare to have the court come to this side of the state. We appreciate you doing so and making efforts annually to try and do so. It's made it very nice for myself and for my clients who are here behind me today to be able to drive 15 minutes and be here. It's also great because I went to school here, so I get to come back. So that's kind of fun for me. Recognizing the setting and understanding that the issue has been briefed for the court, I'd like to make a few brief factual recitations as to what's going on here, hopefully in aid of answering some of the questions that you may have. In essence, this is a call before you dig case. We all know that you have to call 811 if you're going to dig a hole. This is why. You do it to make sure that you don't damage underground lines. Utility providers are then required to respond and come and mark those underground lines. In this case, we're dealing with the City of Rigby, who provides sewer services. Sewer services are marked in green. They come by within a certain time frame and spray the ground so that the excavators know where they can dig to avoid these underground lines. It's important to remember that utility providers are only required to mark in the rights of way. And part of the reason of that is that when the legislation was passed, the legislators felt that it was fair, and those presenting testimony felt that it was fair that the service providers would be in a better position to be able to locate these lines than the actual homeowners themselves. And even though it would result in an increased financial burden to the service providers, that was a consideration by the legislature. And that's really important to remember when we're looking at the plain meaning approach of the statute. Now, Yellowstone Log Homes, it's also important to remember that it is not a customer of DirectCom. DirectCom is the fiber company. They're out of Rockland, Idaho. And they want to extend their fiber in this area. So what they did was they hired a company by the name of Bortech, and Bortech called the dig line and said, we're going to be excavating in this period. And I've cited, or excuse me, in this area, from this intersection to this intersection, and on the south side of the road.
Within the right-of-way?
Within the right-of-way, yes. In fact, mentioning that, another thing that the excavator's required to do is they have to pre-mark with the right with the white line, the intended route of excavation, so that when the service providers show up, they know exactly what side of the road they have to be on, and they know where this line is going to be approximately, this path of excavation. In this case, we have an interesting set of facts because the city of Rigby came in and they marked the main sewer line. There's only one in that area. And they marked the main sewer line. But the statute was changed to say, well, if there's any service laterals that come off to serve customers, or end users is what they call them, if they come off, you need to mark those service laterals within the right-of-way. So this presents a challenge for some of the cities because some of these lines pre-existed the change in the statute. They didn't know they had a duty to make the change, but then all of a sudden they do have a duty to make the change. Well, it's important to remember that the legislature considered that, and considering that they would essentially be flying blind on some of these lines, they still said you have to do something. You have to do more. So in this case, what happened was the city of Rigby responded to the call. They received the call. In fact, not only were they aware the statute was passed, they specifically received a letter from the Idaho Division of Building Safety that was sent in August, about 4 months after the statute was passed, that said, hey, City of Rigby, you need to mark service laterals now. Well, what we're talking about is a case that occurred eight or 9 months after that letter was sent, okay? So, the very interesting part to me is that according to the affidavit of Mitch Bradley, this is on page 47, paragraphs 9 through 11. And I'm not quoting verbatim, but I'm pretty close. I guess I could. But the city essentially adopted a policy. And they said, we don't know where these lines are. So we're going to adopt a policy to not do what the legislature said we had to do. They effectively vetoed the legislature's statute by saying, we don't know where they are, so we won't mark the service laterals.
So, Mr. Davis, I'm not sure that I read the statute as saying, as instructing the city of Rigby in as clear a term as you have suggested, that the service provider has to find the laterals within the right way. Would you point me to that legislation that you say that, the specificity that you suggest?
Yes. It is Idaho Code 205, and it says that the underground facility owner shall locate and mark locatable underground lines, okay? And then it says this, for unlocatable lines, okay? Identified but unlocatable lines, the owner of such facilities or the owner's agent shall locate and mark the underground facilities in accordance with the best information available to the owner of the underground facilities. So in this case, the city said, well, we don't have anything. Well, that's not true. And we presented that to the court, and I'll address that in just a second. But they have to do something. They shall locate and mark these facilities using the best information available. Here, the city said, nope, we're not even going to look at the information. We're going to adopt a policy to not mark the lines. And that's troubling. Back to, and I appreciate the question. The this city policy has not been, hasn't been produced today, to date. I haven't seen this policy, but apparently they've adopted it. And even their attorney at the time, who was Mr. Robin Dunn, not Mr. Angel, contacted the Big Line after receiving notice of the service lateral breach and stated he had never heard of this obligation to mark service laterals. So there's some question whether this policy even exists to begin with. But relative to this case, the city cannot and does not dispute that it received the notice of intent to perform the excavation, this underground boring, that it received a map, and that's in the record as well. I think it's page 150, if I remember correctly. They received a map showing this area of excavation, and they had noticed that the path of excavation was marked with a white line. The city didn't mark this. It doesn't deny that it failed to mark it, the service laterals. It did not produce any evidence that it did mark them. It didn't produce any evidence that it used the best information to mark the service laterals, and I'll address what that information is here in just a second. City did not produce any evidence that it used any information to mark the service laterals. The city does not deny that my clients and this property has been a longtime customer of the city. Therefore, it cannot be disputed the service lateral, and the city does not deny there's only one sewer main that was even running to this property. So the city cannot therefore dispute that a service lateral for which my client has been paying for years must connect to the one line to its north. There's clearly identified that a service lateral exists because they're charging my client and have for years. So it's identified, but it can't be located. So then what do we do?
Counsel, just for the sake of all the people here, could you explain what happened after it wasn't located?
Oh, yes. Because it wasn't located, then BoardTech went forward as it should. It didn't receive any notice or contact from the city, and it continued to bore through. You've probably seen those machines that have the pipes that kind of are pushing down, and then they drill under the ground. It drilled through that and ran its fiber line through, and somehow quite perfectly placed their fiber line in the middle of my client's sewer line. So as a result of the city not marking that service lateral or making any efforts to mark the service lateral, raw sewage continued to build up to the point that it couldn't get through, and then it backed up into a toilet through the toilets and basically destroyed the house, causing tens of thousands of dollars of damage to my client's property. So,
I want to ask you a question,
yes.
Counsel. You've talked about identified but unlocatable underground facilities. The statute actually defines identified facility as any underground facility that is indicated in the project plans as being located within the area of proposed excavation. So were these laterals identified on the project plans?
Can you ask your question again? I'm sorry.
Yes, the statute, it defines identified facilities as an underground facility that is indicated in the project plans as being located within the area of proposed excavation. So I'm asking, and let me ask two questions. Are the project plans in the record? And if so, are the sewer laterals identified on the project plans?
The sewer lines are not identified in the project plan because they can't.
Why not?
They don't know where they are. And the difficult part about that is when you talk about identified sewer lines, there's actually two definitions. There's identified lines, and then there's also identified but unlocatable underground facility definitions. And those are ones that are identified but cannot be located with reasonable accuracy. So how do you put them on the plans?
Well, and my question is, even before that, would these even be considered identified facilities under the definition used in the statute?
I would say yes, in that if they were found on the project plans, they would be able to be found with certainty. But because they can't be located, They can't be found with certainty, otherwise you would know where they were. So in this instance, because they know the lines exist and know that they have to run to the north, the city had the obligation to do something more. And we believe that that is probably best identified through the legislative intent through Idaho Code 552201. And that talks about the importance of, and I'll just read it, it's short. It was passed for the protecting the public health and safety from great personal harm, including death, property damage, and interruption in vital services caused by damage to existing underground facilities. It is furthered the intent of the legislature that the state of Idaho, by adopting this chapter, reaffirms its primacy over underground facility damage prevention programs that protect the health, safety, and property of its citizens. Jumping into part of the appeal here, which is whether my clients have standing or not, that statute specifically identifies the intent to protect personal health, protection against personal harm, and property damage. This continues throughout the entire act. The argument by the city is, well, wait just a second. The only section that talks about filing a lawsuit is 552205A, subsection 2A, that it says excavators have a right to receive compensation for costs incurred if the owner of the underground facility does not locate its facility in accordance with this chapter. To say that the entire statute, both before and after, boils down to 2211A does not do the rest of the Act justice, especially when the Act specifically states in 552211, unless expressly provided herein, nothing in this chapter eliminates, alters, or otherwise impairs common law, statutory, or other pre-existing rights and duties of persons affected by the provisions of this chapter. Nor do the provisions of this chapter affect, I'm skipping down a little bit, affect any civil remedies for personal injury or property damage except as expressly provided for herein.
We're 15 minutes in now, and I'm trying to understand, what did the district court do then that you disagreed with? Did the district court err in determining that you sued the wrong person? Is that the mistake they made, or
yes.
did they err in a different way?
Yes, great question. So there's, I believe, five issues on appeal. The first is that the district court incorrectly found Yellowstone does not have standing to file suit as an injured property owner. They said, well, you're not an excavator, so you can't sue. But that's not what the statute says. In fact, what I just read specifically talks about the protection of individuals, property owners, and their property, as well as public health, all being bases for which the statute was passed to begin with. So to say that because one cause of action exists for excavators, therefore all causes of action for everyone else are precluded, isn't a fair reading of the statute. We admit that 5522 subsection 52A exists, that excavators do have a cause of action. But remember, in this case, my client didn't hire an excavator. Directcom said, we're going to extend our services, and we're going to hire Bortec, and Bortec does what it's supposed to do under the statute. The only person who didn't do what they were supposed to do, or individual or company, was the city, because they adopted a policy to not mark these service laterals. As a result of adopting that policy, they didn't even try. Well, that comes down to the question of what powers does a city even have to trump the legislature and say, well, we're not going to do it. We don't have the money for it. Well, counties and cities run into this problem all the time, but it does present a position for service providers to innovate and to figure out constructive ways to work within their budgets to accomplish the means prescribed by the legislature, not to say, we're not going to do it. Now, on to the common law question, unless I can tell Justin.
No, I was anxious to get to the common law question, okay. Actually.
I have lots more I would love to say, but these usually run short. As to the common law question, when we look at this, I looked for a case in Idaho that said, as a utility provider, do we have some sort of a special relationship here with our customers? And I can't find it in Idaho. In fact, I can't find it. But at the same time, we're a trust entrusting our vital services to service providers. Admittedly, yes, we're going to have service interruptions. But when someone who has that relationship of providing utility to you says, yeah, we knew they were coming, but we figured we didn't need to tell anyone that they would be excavating around these service lines. Well, they could have done a lot of things. See, for a common law negligence case to exist, you have to show four things. You have to show that you have a duty to do something, or that somebody had a duty to act, that they failed to act, that their failure to act resulted in injury to the plaintiff in this case, and you have to prove that there were damages. In this case, a duty to act existed because the city had special knowledge about the intent to excavate bore under where the service laterals are. They know the height of their gravity line for their gravity sewer main. They know these things. And to say, well, we didn't know this stuff, they knew something was coming, and they're providing the service to my client who they charged for years and their predecessors. So when they knew that that was happening, they had to do something more, and they could have done three things about that. One, they could have contacted my client to contact DirectCom or the excavator. Two, they could have contacted the excavator. They're required to leave their phone number, and the city receives that. You'll see in the record that they received that number, and they could have contacted DirectCom directly and said, hey, you guys are doing this. We don't know where our service laterals are. They didn't do any of that. They adopted a policy to do nothing.
So is the basis of the negligence that they didn't do anything, or did they actually affirmatively say it's okay to dig here, and then after that they just wash their hands of it?
Well, remember that a negligence claim talks about the duty, and there can be a duty to act or to refrain from omitting to do something.
Right, so which one is this?
This is an omission of their duty. When they knew something was moving forward that threatened that line, they had a duty to do something, to act.
Did they tell anyone where to dig?
No.
Okay, so this was not them directing these people to drill the hole in a place that they shouldn't have. This is not that case.
This is not that case, no.
And so what's the source of their duty to do more?
Based on their special relationship as a utility provider.
And did you argue that below?
Yes.
Okay. And you hit all seven elements of the special relationship analysis.
Well, I don't believe the court even addressed the common law negligence claim. And that's part of the appeal here is you can't just say, well, we don't have standing, and I disagree with your negligence per se argument, and then completely ignore the common law analogy and say, well, you don't have standing at all. And that's why we're here, is that we believe not only do we have standing and that a negligence per se case exists, but also the court should have analyzed the common law negligence case. So, and all of that would be in the record. I do see that I'm a couple minutes over time here. I'm happy to answer additional questions. One last thing I wanted to say, though, before I forgot. What could the city have done? You'll remember in the brief, I gave a number of examples about ways that people could use, service providers could use spray paint. It's cheap. Spray paint is cheap. And to get out, deploy, and actually be on site, that's the expensive part. If they don't know where it is, there's a number of ways that they could have marked this line. They had information. They had my client's phone number. And while I recognize that the statute says that they're not required to make a phone call, they are required to use the best information available. We are not talking about heroic measures of going through and snaking through everyone's pipes to find out exactly where these lines are. But you could make a phone call to the property owner and find out where your customer and find out where that line exits the house. They had that. They knew the location of the sewer line. There was only one of them that they could have connected to.
And is it essential to your argument then that this is a duty that they could not omit because it was in the public right of way? If it was on private property, would it be a different analysis?
It would be a different analysis because they wouldn't have the ability to go onto private property and do that. But they have, because these public utilities are located in these public rights of way, and having had actual notice that someone was going to come and bore through the property, they knew that this threat was coming to their customers, and they could have done something more. That's the common law end. On a negligence per se end, it's a little bit different in that they had a duty to do something more and use the information available to them. So with that, I'll reserve my remaining 6 minutes, if that's all right.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Stranger?
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Sam Angel. I do represent the city of Rigby. Mayor Datweiler is here from the city of Rigby today. I want to begin with clarifying some terminology, making sure we're on the same page with what some of these words mean. It's important. And what this statute actually requires the city of Rigby to do. First of all, the city of Rigby is the facility. Okay, we maintain a sewer facility. It's underground. It's a series of pipes underground by which we collect the sewer from the end users. Those are the homeowners, and in this case, Yellowstone Log Homes. They're the end user. Okay, the city of Rigby maintains the underground facility, which is their main line. And in this case, it's their main line that runs along State Highway 48 on the south side, and that main line is in the right-of-way, and we have a duty to mark that main line. Connecting to the main line are the service laterals that come in from the houses. The city does not own the service laterals. Those are owned and maintained and installed by the homeowner, or in this case, Yellowstone Log Homes.
But they are in a public right-of-way.
The end of them are, yes. So they come in, the main line's in the public right-of-way. The service lateral comes in and connects to the main line, so that last little bit is in the public right-of-way.
When you say the last little bit, why isn't the entire lateral in the public right-of-way? How could they the city construct something there if it wasn't in a public right-of-way?
So the lateral reaches out hundreds of feet to the house. It's buried underground. It goes across private property to the house itself. It comes in and then it crosses into the public right-of-way, which is basically the street. It's Highway 48 plus the sidewalk. That's the public right-of-way. Does that make sense? And the lateral comes in under the sidewalk and connects to the sewer main.
So the city does not consider in any way that the laterals are part of their system?
Well, the connection is, yes. But the lateral is owned.
So the ends of the pipe are, but the middle of the pipe isn't?
Basically. The lateral is owned by the property owner, in this case, Yellowstone Log Homes. It's placed by them when they build their connection, and it is maintained by them.
So if the owner decided, I don't like where that pipe is, I want to move it around in a different direction, the city would have no say in that?
If they wanted to change connection points, they would run that past the city, and they would connect in a different place to the main line.
But if they wanted to move the middle of the pipe, the city doesn't care?
No, they can move the middle of the pipe, yeah. If they move something on their house or they want to add another building to their house that will connect to that, that's something that a property owner can do. Okay, so in this, so that's service lateral. That's important. Now, the legislature...
Is that lateral an underground facility?
It is part of the underground facility. I think that that's what the legislature is saying. It is an underground facility.
Well, and there's no dispute that the statute says the underground facility owner who provides any utility service, blah, 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 shall locate and mark the service lateral in accordance with the provisions of subsection 2.
Correct.
So the city doesn't dispute that.
Correct. Not in dispute. So the legislature has passed the statute. This is Idaho Code 55-2200. This statute has been passed years ago. It's been updated and revisited and modified many times, including as recently as 2020. And the legislature provides certain duties and responsibilities to the facility owner, the city, and to the end user, and importantly in this case, to the excavator. And the excavator is not sitting here at council table today. That's BoreTech. And that's really important, because BoreTech is really the party that Yellowstone Log Home should have sued. They are the ones that drilled underground through Yellowstone service lateral. They are the ones that did the negligent act that caused the backup.
Would BoreTech have more knowledge of where that lateral was located than the city of Rigby would have had?
BoreTech may have more knowledge of that, absolutely.
Why is that a possibility?
Well, we don't know for sure, number one, because they weren't sued. But BoreTech is in the business of boring along public right-of-ways. BoreTech knows that there is a main line in the ground that was marked by the city of Rigby. They know there's a main line there, and they know roughly where that main line is underground.
I'm just kind of astonished. The city knows where the pipe ends and where the pipe begins, but they don't know how they two connect. I mean, I'm assuming it would be a straight line, but apparently it's not always a straight line.
Oh, no.
why would the city not, in an ordinary course of business, keep track of that kind of information?
They simply haven't. I don't have a why on that one, but I can tell you that in the state of Idaho, in all the cities in the state of Idaho, there are going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of service laterals that are not marked on any official maps within the city.
I'm assuming this is PVC, so they can't take a metal detector out and look for it?
I'm not sure what the material is on every one of them. I would assume on many of them it is PVC. In order for the city to find out where they're at, the city has to go into the home, take a toilet or a large drain out, run a snake or a camera through that service line, and find out where it connects to the main line.
And
that's
so
the process.
Let me ask you something, because Justice Mueller asked earlier about moving the line, and you said if they wanted to remove it from the main pipe and connect at a new location, they would need to talk to the city. Which would tell the city where the service lateral is in the public right-of-way. And so are you telling me when the owner of this home originally connected to the sewer main, they didn't have to have any discussion with the city about where they were going to connect, they just connected wherever they wanted to?
I'm not sure what happened, and that's part of the problem. We as cities, over time, for whatever reason, have not always kept perfect records of
where
those things are.
Wait a second. You said cities. We're just talking about Rigby, right? We don't know if Rexburg or other cities are doing the same thing.
Right. No.
And in this case, why wouldn't that be a duty to keep track of where those junctions are? I mean, it seems to me that the statute that Mr. Davis is relying on suggests that the end users are people that we don't want to impact in the way that Yellowstone was impacted. And why wouldn't the city have the duty to maintain where those connections are?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't have a good answer for the why, but I have an understanding of what the legislature thought about
that.
Let's
talk about the common law. Does the city not have a duty to keep track of where these service connections are?
The city has a duty to maintain an underground facility and provide sewer services to its end users, which the city of Rigby did perfectly in this case.
But the suggestion by Mr. Davis is that the city of Rigby is essentially blinding itself to what it's doing underground in the city of Rigby and seeking to avoid liability for not paying any attention to what it's doing underground.
Well, that makes it sound bad. I don't think we're blinding ourselves. I don't think we're trying to cover our eyes and say, go connect to
whatever
you want.
But isn't that what a duty is all about? I mean, that's how we define duties. We give juries the opportunity to say, did the city of Rigby have a duty to keep track of these connections? And did it breach that duty when it didn't do so and says, tough luck, sorry.
Let's focus on what the city's duty, though, is in terms of Yellowstone Log Homes. Our duty is to provide a sewer service for them, and we do that. Does this court want to extend that duty to protect against all other third-party excavators that go drilling about through town through service laterals? That's the question.
Well, isn't the question really when the statute places the obligation, the duty on the city to mark the service lateral, that the city is just saying, well, we have no idea where it is, and we're not going to bother to try and figure out where it is, so we're going to ignore that part of the statute.
Okay, so here we are at the crux of it. The legislature doesn't say mark all service laterals. That's what they want you to hold. That is incorrect. The legislature says mark all locatable service laterals. This court has to give meaning to the legislature's intent with defining these specific provisions.
But what about the provision that goes on to state if it's identified but unlocatable, then with the best information available to the city, it needs to do so. And for the city to say, well, we don't have any information, so we're not going to do anything, that's what's troubling.
Okay, so that, in my mind, makes perfect sense. Let me help see if I can explain that. If it's identified, that means it's written down on a map somewhere. If it is not identified, it is not written down. We are in the category of it is not identified.
Because it hasn't been written down.
Correct.
But they could have written it down.
Well, that's fair. They could have. But the legislature is telling you that there are situations in the great state of Idaho where we know that cities have not written this down for whatever reason. And I'm not making excuses for that. That's why they give the definition identified, but unlocatable, or simply unlocatable. This one is not identified. And so there is a section that talks about...
How would it be identified and not locatable under your analysis? As I understand, you're saying it's identified, it's written down.
Right.
So if it's written down, it's identified, then how is it not locatable if it's written down?
There are situations where that can happen. I wish I had Mr. Bradley here, our public works director. He could do a better job of explaining that. But there are situations where they can identify a line on a map, but for whatever reason they can't locate by this definition within 24 inches where it's at.
Well, did he do that in the record for us? I mean, did he not provide an affidavit or testimony or something that we can look at?
Yes, he absolutely did. His affidavit's in the record. The court can review that. And what he'll tell you is that it's not identified and that it is not reasonably locatable.
And so the city couldn't identify it knowing that they provide sewer services to this home and they charge this home. Does that not make the fact that there's a lateral identifiable?
It doesn't under the statute. It really doesn't. If that's the holding of this court, then this court is placing a duty on all the cities, including Rigby, to go out and find all of these laterals on private property that are not identified currently, and placing that burden on the city. That would be a huge burden shift beyond what this statute requires the cities to do.
Well, and it may not have to go that far, right? It may just be a matter of saying, cities, if you know you're providing sewer service to a home, you have an obligation to either make a notation on the ground somewhere, to call the excavator and let them know we have sewer laterals because we provide service, but we don't know exactly where they are. I mean, there's if the city has a duty, there's a variety of ways that the city can satisfy that duty short of going out and snaking everybody's toilet and running it back to the main line. I think that's Mr. Davis's argument.
Right. And I think that what's in the record is that we cannot do it in this case. We could not do it in this case. There were not enough indicators of where that line was in this case for our public works director to reasonably identify it.
And you couldn't call the excavator and say, we know we have sewer laterals because we've got five homes, but we can't tell you where they are.
Well, we could have, but what good does that do them?
What does
that not tell them they already know?
Doesn't that then put the excavator on notice that they need to take due care when they're excavating?
The excavator is on notice of that, absolutely. When they know there's a main line and there are five houses to the south of this main line, they know that there are lines connecting, and that's why...
So, but how do they know they're connected to that system and they don't have, you know, like a septic tank in their yard?
Okay.
I mean, the city knows they're providing services. The excavator doesn't know, short of saying there's a sewer line, there's some homes, I don't know if they're connected to this sewer line or not.
I guess my answer is, what can we do then when we don't know? We can go paint the entire road green, which doesn't tell BoreTech anything else, anything more than not painting it at all. Or we can tell them, hey, there are connections, but we don't know where they're at, which again, that's a lack of information. That's not going to tell them anything.
Let me ask a two-step question here. First of all, is there a genuine issue of material fact about whether or not the breach occurred in a public right-of-way?
No, that's not in dispute.
Okay, so it did happen in a public right-of-way?
Yes, it was under the sidewalk.
So I'm trying to understand why a public right-of-way then. It wouldn't be the city's responsibility to manage what's going on underground in its right-of-way as opposed to because the landowner can't just build something across the city's public right-of-way without getting permission, correct?
Right.
I mean, you said that the landowner can do whatever they want when they're building this lateral, but they can't go through a public right-of-way without the city granting them permission.
Correct.
So if the city has a public right-of-way, shouldn't it be presumed that they have a responsibility to clear their own lateral or their own right-of-way before they allow anyone in the public to dig in it?
Mark the lateral, you mean?
Yeah.
That's what the legislature is dealing with in this section. But the legislature is recognizing that there are laterals that cannot reasonably be located, that are unidentified and cannot reasonably be located.
What I'm still trying to get my head around is I can understand if the city owns a main line, and you've got a house here, and someone's tapped into the main line, and over their own private property, they've connected. Who knows if they went straight or if they did a bunch of loop-de-loops, but they somehow connected. And I can understand that if it's on private property, maybe the city will say, well, we don't know how they connected it. But if it's in the city's right-of-way, why isn't it their business to know what happens in their right-of-way?
I know we're struggling with this, but it just simply is a fact that this city and I've handled enough of these cases to know that many other cities do not know where all of those service lateral connections are. It is simply a fact that exists. And it's a fact that's in this record that this city did not know where it's at.
Is this a house that was built and connected to the main line in like the 1800s or the early 1900s?
I know it would seem that it's that long ago, but more recently than that.
How recently?
I don't know when this one was built. Offhand, I don't know.
Is that in the record?
I don't believe it's in the record.
Are we talking about something in the last 20 years or something in the last 50 years?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't want to guess. I don't know. But the concept is, and I know it seems hard for us sitting here in this room, but the concept is the legislature has already considered this. They know that this problem exists. And what they did is they placed that burden on the excavator. The entire section 552205 is placing that burden on the excavator. It starts with, before commencing excavation, the excavator shall, and it goes through this process. The excavator is in the best position to call for a dig line, do some hand shoveling and figure out where the lines are, and ultimately the excavator is responsible for not boring through somebody's line. If the excavator does...
Where in the statute does it say that the excavator is the culpable party and the private right of action against the excavator by the end user? Is that in the statute?
It's not in the statute, but...
But that's what you're suggesting is in the statute.
No, I'm not suggesting that that's in the statute. I'm suggesting that in the statute, the excavator has the duty to call the dig line...
Which they did.
And to then bore safely through the ground. And so...
It's to follow the directions of the person that's marked the line.
Fair enough.
And it did.
I'm
not sure Gore-Tex has liability here.
Well, we don't know because they weren't named. And that gets back to the standard.
I'm not sure they have to be named. If the city hasn't done what it's supposed to do, why is Gore-Tex a necessary party?
Because...
You could have joined Gore-Tex.
I could have what?
Joined Gore-Tex.
I could have.
And didn't.
Right. There's no need to. So here's the issue. You have an end user, and you have Bortec. Bortec damaged that line. The end user wants to skip Bortec and go straight to the city. They want to go straight to the city and hold the city liable for the negligence of Bortec. That it would obliterate our basic principles of proximate cause and of comparative fault to say that we're going to leave Bortec out of this.
This may not be in the record, but I mean, just to help us understand, what is Bortec's negligence here?
Drilling through the service line.
That's what they did. What was negligent about them doing that?
Not going around it, drilling through it. You can drill in and around public utilities without hitting the service lines. It is possible to do that. They could have drilled a little bit below. They could have drilled a little bit above that main line that's underground.
If they did everything the statute requires and still hit it, are they negligent?
The statute is not setting out to tell BoreTech how to do its job. It's setting out to tell who has the duty to mark the lines, okay? BoreTech still has responsibility for its own conduct.
This doesn't sound like negligence per se. This sounds like res ipsa loquitur. Well, they hit it, so therefore they're negligent.
And that's not what I'm arguing at all.
I know, but that sure sounds like that, because that's what res ipsa is. If you hit it, the only way you would hit it is if you were negligent.
Not necessarily. But that's the whole concept of bringing BoreTech into the case, so that BoreTech can stand up for themselves and describe what they did or did not do while they were drilling. Were they drilling with their eyes covered? Or were they fishing around and making sure that they were drilling safely around a public utility?
Yeah, all we know, it was a direct hit.
Yeah. And so the issue with that is, and this court, and the district court properly found that, standing is critical. And the standing, the negligent act, the drilling through the service line was done by BoreTech. The claim should have been against BoreTech, which BoreTech then has, by statute, the ability to bring a claim against the city of Rigby if the city of Rigby didn't meet its obligation to mark the line correctly.
And you'd be defending that action the same way you're defending this action.
Correct.
And my struggle with that argument is, our cases recognize that a duty in negligence can be imposed by a statute. The causes of action available under that statute don't limit to whom that duty applies, or to who that... Never been good with who or whom, so.
I don't know either.
Thank you.
I think you
got it
right. Thank you. So that's my struggle with the standing argument, is just because this statute may not expressly grant the end user a right doesn't mean that the statute doesn't impose a duty in negligence on the city to do something. And it doesn't mean that the end user isn't a beneficiary of that duty. So I just don't see standing here at all. In terms of a basis to dismiss, I think Yellowstone clearly has standing. They were affected. And so help me understand why we're looking at just this statute to determine whether they had standing.
Well, this statute is a statute that governs dig line and excavation underground around utilities. It is the section that they brought the negligence per se claim under. So I think in terms of the negligence per se claim, it absolutely governs.
Well,
the second claim for negligence.
I think the negligence per se claim just says the duty arose from this statute, but it isn't a direct cause of action under the statute.
And to that point, I just wonder, this was a theme that I hit on many times when I was a district judge, is really negligence per se itself a cause of action, or is negligence per se, I think we just had the clock, came back on, and it went back off.
Stay away from that.
It's not running. It was 317.
Oh, there it is.
This happens in the NFL all the time. Okay.
It was at 317, though, and now it's at 820.
Is it?
It should be 820.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
It was wrong right before it turned on. Okay. I'm trying to remember my question now.
Yeah, I think
it's negligence per se.
Yes, is negligence per se really a cause of action? Isn't negligence per se just a different way of defining duty? I mean, this is a negligence case, and there's different duties. There's a statutory duty, perhaps, and there's a common law duty. It's not really a cause of action.
Yeah, you're
it?
Right. You're right. I stand before this court and argue all the time that negligence per se is the same thing as negligence. You're right. It comes down to the duty. So the duty is created by statute under negligence per se, and where is the duty outside of the statute? Our duty, again, is to, Judge Thompson got this right, our duty is to provide sewer services to the end user. BoreTech's duty is to, if they're going to drill fiber optic lines about the city, is to do that without hitting underground facilities. And so, at a minimum, they have to be in the case to be able to decide under principles of comparative fault who is responsible for what.
Well, the duty requires that the stuff goes down the toilet, not up the toilet.
And we had a nice open flow to go down and away from the house until BoreTech drilled through it and blocked it. And so that's the concept behind the standing issue with negligence. That's it. I mean...
But it strikes me that what Mr. Davis is arguing is the other duty under the statute is to mark the service laterals. And so you've got your defenses to why, no, you know, we fulfilled our duty because we didn't have any information on where they were. But that's where I'm struggling to see why that's a standing issue.
Okay. Well, I don't know that I can say it any better than that.
And then my second question is, why does BoreTech need to be in that suit if it's all about this, the cause of what happened was your failure to mark the sewer lateral?
I simply will not concede it's all about that. Absolutely not. BoreTech drills 6 inches deep or we're not here. Why is BoreTech drilling a parallel latitude to the main line, knowing that there are houses and service laterals in there? Drill 6 inches lower and you're missing them all.
But you can join BoreTech. That's what lawsuits are all about, sorting out comparative responsibilities, you suggest.
So I don't believe that it's the defendant's duty to join the person that actually caused the negligence.
Depends on when you get to trial and just point at that empty chair and say, we're out, it's them, let us off the hook. But you get out of summary judgment by saying it's them?
Well, that's what I would do if we got to trial. But, and yes, we should get out of summary judgment. Because at summary judgment, the plaintiff has to bring in the party that did the negligence.
Well, not necessarily. They're saying the city of Rigby is negligent. And that's their burden to prove. And that's what the case is all about. And if you want to try to join this a joint tortfeasor, that's your prerogative. But they don't have to sue if they don't think BoreTech was negligent.
I get your point. Second, so let's set the standing aside for a second. The district court dismissed this on three independent bases. And the second is that we didn't violate the statute, right? So, I would like the court to find that we were in the category of not identified, okay, under the definitions. This line was not identified, so it comes down to whether or not it is reasonably locatable. And what is in the record about what is reasonably locatable in this case? The only thing that Yellowstone has in the record in their favor is that we have a utility bill, we're paying a utility bill, and you have a facility, so it should be reasonably locatable.
You're saying that you have notice of Yellowstone's service lateral, but you have apparently no records as to where it actually is. And that strikes me as a negligence question for a jury to sort out. Because you may have that obligation imposed by a jury because they don't like what happened here.
Right. But how do you get around the definition that it's not identified? What meaning do you give to the legislature's word that it must be identified?
So you're saying it's not identifiable, but you have notice of it being there. So how do you not know where it is if you have notice of where it is? Because you don't keep records. That's why you don't know where it is. Because, as you pointed out, they have to get a permit from you to hook onto the sewer. And you obviously know they're consumers of the sewer system that exists in Rigby. Why shouldn't you have to face a jury to have that question resolved?
Well, when asked if you have to get a permit now, yes, you have to get a permit now. I don't know. That's part of the problem in this, and I think it's what the legislature is acknowledging, that over the course of time, that may not have always been the case. We don't know the reason why the city doesn't know that there's a connection at that specific point.
Doesn't it somewhat undermine your position, though, the fact that the city's prior attorney apparently said he wasn't even aware of the new statute and the new duties that it imposed? It'd be one thing to say, well, yeah, we're aware of this, but it's unidentifiable, so we're going to do nothing. They didn't do nothing because of that. They did nothing because they didn't know about the statute.
I cannot comment on the city's prior attorney, and I don't know that that's in the record anymore. That's not in the record anywhere.
I thought there was some reference during the argument, and there's a footnote, I believe, somewhere in one of the briefs that talks about that. Whether it's actually in the record...
If he wants to find that, that's fine. I do not understand that to be in the record. What's in the record is the affidavit from Mitch Bradley, the Public Works Director, about what we knew and what we did not know. And what he says is that it was not identified on any map. And we don't know the reason why.
Right. But, again, getting to my question, if the attorney for the city wasn't even aware of the statute, then how can we say that he made a decision whether it was identifiable or not?
I can't comment that. I don't know. I don't believe that that happened. Okay. I don't know.
Fair enough.
But what we have is, and I think what this court has to do, and I think what the district court did correctly, was give meaning to the legislature's intent. If we go, Justice Stegner, with all due respect to the, if the city knows that there's a connection there, then the city has to know where the line is. We are shifting the entire burden to the city for any breach of that line. And I don't think that's what the legislature intended to do with this.
Well, what we ask juries to resolve is whether the city's response to this problem is reasonable. And that's what jury trials are all about.
And is it not reasonable for, so let's talk about the reasonableness, is it not reasonable for the public works director to explain, as he did in his affidavit, what he would have to do to find that within the two-day time period? What he's telling you is he couldn't do that within the two-day time period.
That has nothing to do with how he got to the point of the two-day time period. And if the city has not kept records,
okay,
and those records would have disclosed precisely the problem that was experienced in this case, I think you could be found, your client could be found liable for not keeping records.
Under this statute, no.
I'm talking about the common law. We're talking about common law now. Okay. I mean, if you're not doing things that a reasonable person would have done, that's what negligence is all about.
I get where you're at. I think that in the situation,
especially at summary judgment, I mean, if you'd won this case at trial, that would be a different question.
Okay. On the common law duty, though, I think that the appellant, and I would ask, question him, what is the basis for the duty that is imposed on the city? He has conceded that there is not a special relationship and he can't find one. So it's a general negligence claim. The question then becomes, what is the negligence of the city? The duty to mark is established by the statute, and it has exceptions under which we don't have to mark.
And those don't supersede the common law?
I think they do.
They say, the statute says explicitly it doesn't do anything to the common law.
But it specifically sets out what the city has to do when marking lines. And it tells the city there are situations where it's not reasonably locatable, and you don't have to mark it then. If the legislature wanted to, they could have, in this statute, said, hey, cities, go mark every single, find every one right now, because you have to mark them, every one regardless. They could have put that line right in the statute when they revised it in 2020, and they did not do that.
What about a less ridiculous construction that they need to provide it when they're asked to? Not identify everyone in the universe, just the ones that they're asked.
They could have done that as well, and they didn't. I think the reason they didn't do that is specifically what Mitch Bradley told you, is I can't do that in 2 days. And the record shows that Yellowstone defined it. They had to lift the toilet and run a snake, but then they had to dig a hole in the ground and create a new clean out and run a new snake.
Okay. What if they said, we can't do it in 2 days, but if you give us 5, we'll let you know? Wouldn't that have been reasonable?
Right, but the statute then requires 2 days. So who is setting the parameters under which this has to be found?
But it's easier to be sympathetic to someone that's doing the best they can versus someone that throws up their hands and say, I can't do anything.
Well, I don't think we're throwing up our hands and saying we can't do anything.
What did you do?
We told them we couldn't locate it within the 2 days, that we could not locate it.
Told them that you couldn't do anything.
Oh, I think we're well beyond time. Unless there are substantive questions. Thank you very much. Madam Clerk, how much time does the appellant have left? The 30 minutes?
6 minutes, Your Honor.
Sir, when you're ready.
Thank you. Justice, as I failed to mention, as I try and do, and I think it's important everyone understand, this is an adversarial system. Judge Thompson's a good judge. Mr. Angel is a great attorney. They're both great. I didn't mean to
differentiate the two. It's good to have good counsel to work with in an adversarial system. These are difficult issues. But we believe that we're correct. We believe that policy has been reflected in the legislature's enactment of this. If you look at footnote 12 of our opening brief, and I know that you're not going to have time to digest all of this here, but I gave you 5 or 6 bullet points to the actual committee meeting minutes where this is pulled from. But I want to read, I guess, one part of my footnote to you that I think is a pretty good summary of what the legislature did here. I said, in fact, testimony was presented before the Senate Commerce and Human Resources Committee that the utility service providers, in consultation with the Idaho Association of Cities and legal counsel, were willing to take on this obligation to mark with reasonable accuracy, despite concerns expressed about the ability to locate old lines that were not historically marked. The legislature and those presenting testimony in support of the bill alike recognized utility providers are in a superior position, not excavators. Utility providers are in a superior position to locate the service laterals within the public rights of way, and they should do so with reasonable accuracy, even though it could result in negative financial impact. Furthermore, testimony was presented before the legislature that nothing about the addition of Idaho Code 55-2205 subsection 3, that's where it says the end user has no obligation to go out and mark their own lines, limited liability beyond those limits already addressed by law, including private causes of action. I do want to mention that regardless of what may have happened beyond the service lateral outside of the right-of-way, we're not talking about that. We're only concerned about what happened within the right-of-way. But there are things that the city did know that they can't dispute. And I'll go to Mitch Bradley's affidavit in a second and try to get that citation that one of you had about the conversation from the attorney. First of all, I think it's important to remember, green spray paint, it's cheap. It really is. There's a number of things that could have been done to mark where they knew this was, and that's where the service lateral is or could have been found, at least with Beth's efforts. And here's why. They may say, well, we didn't know how to find that in 2 days. Well, they knew where the house was. They know where the sewer main is. They know where the sewer main is not. They know where the other houses are. So understanding that line has to run north from my client's house, it's not going to go under their houses. So it's going to be outside of that. And looking at property boundaries and the like, they also had phone numbers where they could have made contact to find this information out. We don't have to snake lines, but we do have to do something.
Well, assuming most contractors, when they build a home, are going to do a straight line because it's cheaper and uses less PVC pipe. But what if you have like a tree growing in the yard or some kind of improvement, a fountain or something? In those kind of cases, it is hard to determine where it goes, isn't it?
It can be. It can be. But there's enough known about this where efforts could have been made to identify, reasonably identify, best efforts, the location of this. To the extent that, I mean, there's been some discussion about they knew how, you know, they could have gone 6 inches lower, they could have gone 6 inches higher. Well, the city knows the height of their line, of their main line, and they're not going to provide that information. And we get these bullseye hits. Everyone's digging at 3 feet. Well, if the sewer line's at 3 feet, doesn't that also put a burden on the city to say, hey, if you guys were thinking about digging at 3 feet, that's where our sewer line is. So most likely this service lateral is going to run into our sewer line at 3 feet. They didn't do anything. Here's Mitch Bradley's words.
Well, just a second. There's a lot of what-ifs in the case.
Sure.
A lot of those what-ifs have admittedly come from the court. But didn't the legislature try to do away with the what-ifs by drawing a distinction between identifiable and unidentifiable? Otherwise, everyone in this room can be backseat drivers in determining how the city of Rigby makes these kind of decisions.
Yes, I think we lost our audio, but I'll speak up. The legislature, I believe, cured this by using the language best efforts. And they said, we don't know. There are going to be situations where you guys don't know where these lines are. So just use your best efforts. I think we're back on.
Where's the best efforts?
Best information available.
Locate and mark the underground facilities in accordance with the best information available.
Yes, best information available.
And your argument about marking, given the information they had, was to just mark the whole area and say there might be sewer laterals in here.
Well, there could have been a number of ways to do it. Yeah, you could have spray painted the whole sidewalk green. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do that. But, you know, I mentioned a few things they could have done. Just in furtherance of an argument made, they could have done a few diagonal lines. They could have made a note. They could have made a box around it.
A box around what?
Around the area of excavation. Because they already knew where their main line was, and they know where the end of the public right-of-way is at the sidewalk. So they could have made a box around it.
What I'm understanding you to be saying is when they know they have the main line and they can see there are properties, they had an obligation to designate the entire area as possibly containing laterals.
Unless there's information, that's an option. The other thing that could be done is they could look at the area and determine, okay, there's a house, let's say here, your house is off to the side of this, call the homeowner, hey, does your sewer line exit through the front? Yeah, I have no idea where it is. Well, at least you know at that point it's in front of this person's house and before you get to the road. So at least you have a small section there you can mark. But they didn't even do that. Instead, they said, based on the available manpower and budget and considering the general public interest, the city adopted the policy that it is not economically feasible to locate service laterals. Because the city is not able to field mark service laterals with reasonable accuracy, we do not mark them. That's the policy the city of Rigby adopted.
Sir, I do believe you've answered the question. I would note the court was interested to have you get to this question of where in the record is anything about the city's attorney's comments. I would give the appellant 5 work days to submit a post-hearing submission on that, directing the court to where in the record, if anywhere, that is, and I would give the respondent 5 days after any filing to respond to that. We just are beyond time and have to shut this down, but if you truly have that in the record or a statement or claim you wish to make, I'll give you the 5 days, work days to get that in to us.
I understand it's on page 152 and those recordings were presented to the court.
All right. Page 152 of the record?
Of the record.
Well, that may solve it then. Mr. Angel, do you have any objection to us considering that since we're well past time?
No, that's fine.
They would have been marked as exhibits F and G. Thank you.
All right. With that, this matter is under advisement. We appreciate the spirit of discussion today. Again, the attendance of all of you here has been our pleasure to see and hopefully share this experience with you today. We will be back in the room momentarily to take questions for a period of time. So we'll get ready for that. I understand council have agreed to stay for that. So we'll be right back with you, and this matter will be decided accordingly as it's under advisement. Thank you very much.
All rise, please.